I tell you what, on a day like this, you step outside. The air is just cool enough to notice that it's not the summer heat anymore. Humidity's down. You look around. Everything's so beautifully green in this part of the Midwest where the rains have been falling. Of course, there's been some flooding and there have been some troubles like that. But you look at it, you say to yourself, what a marvelous creation we have. Now, a lot of people think it not odd at all to consider these wonders around us not as creation but as the environment. That's always sounded to me like such a sterile way of thinking about the world that God has put us in. But why has he put us here? I mean, as creatures in this created world, what's our relationship to the planet, as they say? There are many evangelicals out there who are saying we need to put the environment higher on the list of Christian priorities. They're saying global warming is a crisis that calls for Christian action. It triggers certain Bible passages that we need to be mindful of. How are we to react to all of this? Dr. Cal Beisner joins us for the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. You can as well. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE. It's Monday, August the 11th. We're coming to you live. You can email us live right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. Cal Beisner is a regular guest. He is founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Cal, welcome back.
Hey, thanks very much. It's great to be back, and congratulations to you all for having your show back.
Oh, thank you very much. If I don't buy a lot of the scientific data or a lot of the scientific conclusions about something like global warming, does that make me anti-environment?
Oh, absolutely not. And in fact, I think Christians are the most pro-environmental people because we recognize that God has given human beings a mandate to take care of this planet in Genesis 1:28, where he tells us to be fruitful and multiply, to fill up the earth, to subdue it, and to rule over it. Now, from an evolutionary worldview, for example, there is no way to justify saying that we have any responsibility whatsoever for the rest of the earth. In fact, there's no way to justify any ethics from an evolutionary perspective. But from a Christian perspective, we have the revelation of God, which gives us an ethical mandate, and included in that mandate is the mandate to take care of this planet. But it also is a mandate that says, from the Word of God, that we're supposed to test all things and hold fast what is good, in 1 Thessalonians 5:21. And part of that testing is we need to be very, very careful that we make decisions on the basis of a solidly biblical worldview and theology and ethics, and on the basis of good science and good economics. And unfortunately, an awful lot of what happens in environmental advocacy does not rest on any of those, let alone all of them. And so we Christians need to be wary. We need to be good skeptics, which is really a large part of what any good scientist is. He hears that some scientist has done research that yields a particular conclusion, and one of the first things every good scientist wants to do is, all right, I want to try to replicate that and see if I can show that it doesn't really yield the conclusion he thought.
One of the things that concerns me about it, the environmental movement, at least it seems the direction that it's going, even among Christians who are showing a greater concern for the environment, some of them, is that it seems to be more planet-oriented, more globe-oriented than oriented toward the neighbor. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is the first reason I think Christians need to consider themselves good, godly stewards of this world around us is for the sake of our neighbors, not for the sake of the planet.
Yes, I think that's absolutely so, and that's because human beings really are qualitatively different from all the other forms of life in this world. The scriptures tell us that God made man in his image and after his likeness, not polar bears and not snail darters and not bald eagles and not rivers and lakes and forests and streams. He made men and women in his image, and that means that men and women have to take priority. Now, it doesn't mean that we should, wipe out, that we should, to take terribly anthropopathic language for it, but language common in the environmental movement, it doesn't mean that we should rape the earth for the sake of human beings. In fact, if you do that, you're hurting human beings. But what it does mean is that we need to take human needs into first consideration, and we need to understand how it is that God has made human thriving and the thriving of the rest of the earth mutually beneficial. So that as we promote human welfare, we're also promoting environmental welfare. And that's partly because, as we've discovered through economic history, as economies develop and people get wealthier, they tend to be ready to allocate more and more of their wealth to environmental improvement. So that environments go through a sort of a transition. In early economic development, more pollution occurs, but the benefits of the polluting activity outweigh the harms of the pollution, and so human health and longevity increase. But as economies get wealthier still, people then can afford to spend more on cleaning up the environment, and soon pollution emissions peak and then fall, and before too long, they actually fall below what they were before the economic development began.
It's difficult to sort the hype, the urban legend, the downright fiction from the facts when it comes to something like global warming. What is the best evidence we have regarding global warming?
Well, you'll get a lot of different answers to that from a lot of different people. But at the Cornwall Alliance, we work hand-in-hand with a wide variety of different climatologists, meteorologists, astrophysicists, and atmospheric chemists and so on. And we try to stay up with the latest developments in the scientific research on this. I would say that the best picture that we've got is that human activity in emitting CO2 and adding to CO2 in the atmosphere probably has some tiny impact on global temperature, though very, very tiny indeed, but that the vast majority of what is driving global temperature is thoroughly natural, and it's cyclical, and it has to do with cycles in solar energy output, solar wind output, cycles in ocean and atmosphere circulation. Let me give you one example. Last August, a year ago now, Dr. Roy Spencer and colleagues, Roy is a good friend, he's an evangelical, and he's principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in climatology, published an article showing, on the basis of satellite observation, that cirrus clouds decrease instead of increasing with increasing surface temperature. Now, all the global climate models had said the opposite and therefore saw them as a positive feedback to increasing surface temperature. And that was how you could get the notion of runaway greenhouse effect. What this showed instead is that cirrus clouds are a negative feedback. They actually act like a thermostat to release more heat out into space when the surface warms. And this is part of what led Spencer and his colleagues to conclude that this wipes out about 75% of the human attribution of global warming done by, say, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. But that's just one of many, many different things. And I would invite your listeners to come to cornwallalliance.org and click on our articles tab, and they can read a number of articles related to that. And they can also subscribe to our newsletter, which keeps people up on exactly what's going on in the science of this.
What do you think, with about a minute and a half before we take our first break, Dr. Beisner, do you think it's that some in the science community have kind of unwittingly accepted the conclusions or the predictions regarding global warming and gone so far out on a limb that even when evidence that tends to mitigate their conclusions is presented, they simply, it can't be, because after all, we're just so far out on this limb, it would take a lot of trouble to climb back.
Yeah, I think that is the explanation probably for why some have not yet backed off, although a very large number have. The United States Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, Minority Committee, has kept track of the numbers of climate scientists who are former believers in man-made global warming and now are critics of that theory, and it runs in the hundreds. And I think it's going to increase as more and more discoveries like the one that I just described by Roy Spencer are published. There are other reasons, too. There are There are reasons of, I think, entirely honest disagreement as to how to interpret data, but there are also some reasons that are financially related. If you do a research proposal asking for a grant and you say that your work is related to the harm expected from global warming, you're likely to get funding. If you don't, you won't get it.
We're talking with Dr. Cal Beisner, founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. I want to hear from you. 1-877-623-MYIE. It's Monday, August the 11th. You can email us here in the studio as well. talkback@issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. When we come back from this break, there was an open letter, a statement, I don't know what to call this, a manifesto of types, called Climate Change and Evangelical Call to Action. It was signed by over 80 prominent evangelicals very recently, and it called for raising the priority of the environment in the evangelical mind and on the political social agenda as well. It cited Bible passages. It said this would be a good idea, not only because it's something that we need, but because perhaps there's a real danger here. Of course, when you move one priority up the list, other priorities have to go down the list. We'll talk about that with Dr. Cal Beisner after this.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Jeffrey Horn, William Jonas, Matthew Bowers, Eunice Armstrong, Kenneth Wilcox, Joel Thompson, Paul Gelbach, Mark, Dennis Hintz, and Kenneth Schmidt. Thanks for your support.
Issues Etc. is a team effort. Your phone calls, email, and snail mail help resurrect this worldwide outreach. Now we need your help to sustain Issues Etc. by making a gift to Lutheran Public Radio today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Help support Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the thinking Christian.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., Scott Klusendorf on Stem Cell Research 101. We'll get a primer on what the concerns are with this, what's being called groundbreaking research in disease. We're talking about Christianity and the environment. Dr. Cal Beisner is our guest. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number this Monday, August the 11th, 1-877-623-MYIE. Hey, Cal, your sister Gretchen Pasentino was on the program Friday, and for some reason she told me to tell you that she's going to throw you in the garbage can.
Now, the way we put it to each other is, I want to put you in the garbage can.
I want to what in the world? I mean, I know it's an inside inside Beisner joke, but...
Well, it comes from a children's book that we both went through many, many times when we were growing up as little children. But, Scott, I'm sorry.
Todd. That's all right.
You mentioned Scott Plusendorf a minute ago, and I had his name in my mind, but Todd, the real truth that everybody needs to know is that I taught Gretchen everything she knows. That's true.
I thought you were the little brother.
I am.
So she had to wait for you to come along before she began her education in the all of the things that she's apparently mastered.
That's right. Yes.
All right. Now I will tell her that when I talk to her again,
just to keep
the conversation going.
Yeah, she'll deny it. Of course, you know I can predict that.
I think what she'll probably say that Bob, her late husband, taught her everything she knows.
Well, but I taught Bob everything he knows.
Oh my goodness, and that's saying a lot to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that is.
Okay.
He was a wonderful guy,
and
she's a wonderful, wonderful sister.
Absolutely. Well, it was back in February that the so-called Evangelical Climate Initiative issued this statement called Climate Change, a Call to Action. What was the nature of this document, and what concerns, if any, did you have about it?
Well, first off, it was February of 2006, so it's 2 years plus ago that came out. And it was a document that essentially said man-made catastrophic global warming is real, and we have to fight it, and we should fight it by promoting very, very severe cutbacks in the use of fossil fuels in order to reduce CO2 emissions, and the cost of doing that will be justified by the benefits to be achieved by it. It also claimed that the world's poor were going to be the biggest losers from global warming. Well, I read the document. It had almost no data in it. It only cited one source, and that was the unauthoritative summary for policymakers of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And it basically said, here's the conclusion, trust us. It didn't really make its case with evidence and argument. And I read the list of signers. They were 86 very, very prominent Christian leaders, Christian college presidents, megachurch pastors, mission leaders, and so on. But not one of them had the specialized expertise necessary to be able to evaluate claims in that field. Well, I've been writing in this field, researching and writing in this field, for about 20 years. And I read the stuff, and I knew that there was solid science that disagreed and solid economics that disagreed as well. So through the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation and our contacts with scientists and economists and the like around the world, we put together an opposing statement called A Call to Truth, Prudence, and Protection of the Poor, an Evangelical Response to Global Warming, which our listeners can see at cornwallalliance.org. And we included a lot of data, a lot of explanation. We cited authoritative scientific sources, and we said that the climate changes that we have seen are almost entirely natural in cause, that they are not catastrophic, that there's not good reason to think that they're going to become catastrophic, and that the attempt to fight global warming by drastic reductions in fossil fuel use will so drive up energy prices as to cause major increases in food prices and frankly the prices of everything else that we consume, because we use energy in making everything, and that those in turn would result in prolonging and worsening poverty for the poor around the world, especially in places like sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, and Latin America. While their document got 86 signatures from prominent Christian leaders, ours got initially 132. It's now over 170 signatures by people who, most of them, are scientists and environmental economists with expertise in the fields necessary to weigh and evaluate the arguments pro and con. I think that we have, frankly, won the debate. Unfortunately, the other side just keeps repeating its mantra and doesn't actually engage the debate. We've actually been involved in a number of conferences where we've tried to get them to send representatives, and they won't.
1-877-623-MYIE or email us talkback@issuesetc.org. Herman is listening in Illinois. Herman, thank you for waiting and welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to commend Dr. Wiesner for presenting this clarity on this important issue. It sort of reminds me the thing is being by the evangelicals who signed on to the global warming thing. It sort of harkens back to the medieval church making people feel guilty enough that they have to buy indulgences. And if you bring it into the implications of environmentalism, it has implications, as he just mentioned, about raising the price of fuel. You have the question of human genocide, for example, coming on, that the lesser developed countries already have problems with disease. They can't use DDT to deal with malaria, mosquitoes, and things like that. That this is a very, very serious matter and requires certainly a great deal of clarity so that we're able to carry out our stewardship without being overtaxed just to keep environmental bureaucrats going.
Herman, thank you very much. Your thoughts there, Cal?
Yeah, I think he's got a pretty solid understanding, frankly. You know, in 1973, when the OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, put in an embargo on oil, they drove up the price of oil to more than double in a period of just about 3 months. Historians studying the effects of that around the world indicate that that caused tens of millions of people to die of starvation in Africa, Asia, and Latin America within the next couple of years, the next 4 to 5 years. Now, that increase in oil price was actually small by comparison with what we have experienced in the last several years, especially related to the increasing demand for oil that is not being matched by the increasing supply, but also related to the attempt to restrict production of oil in order to save the world from global warming. And we have also pushed up food prices by trying to make ethanol out of corn, and you get only 2% added energy from the energy that it takes to make this stuff anyway, and that has driven up food prices. And we are literally killing people around the world because we're fighting this media-hyped, largely speculative danger that we call man-made global warming. And that, I think, is unconscionable, and that's why the Cornwall Alliance is trying so hard to make the case the other direction and help the American public to know what's going on about this and also policymakers in Washington.
Cal, finally, why should Christians, laying aside all of the hype and the misinformation regarding the environment, why should they still care and work to care about the environment?
Oh, we should still care about the environment because God made it, and he made it for his glory, and because he intends for us to recognize his glory revealed in it. We should care about it because he commands us to in the scriptures, not only in Genesis 1:28, where he tells us to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule over it, but also in Genesis 2:15, where he told Adam and Eve to cultivate and guard the garden. The cultivating it means to improve its fruitfulness. The guarding of it means to ensure that it doesn't degrade. And when you put those two passages together, what it really means is that as mankind multiplied, he was to move out from the garden, cover the rest of the earth, and transform wilderness into garden, which is the point of my book, Where Garden Meets Wilderness, is that in the scriptures, we tend to find wilderness associated with curse and garden with blessing. Human action, particularly as directed by a biblical understanding and done by people who have been transformed by the redeeming blood of Christ, human action can improve the state of the world around us. And we ought to be turning it from wilderness into garden. So I would invite people to come to cornwallalliance.org and read the Cornwall Declaration on Environmental Stewardship, read the Call to Truth, read the open letter that is signed by over 170 people related to that Call to Truth, and other articles that we have there, and sign up for our newsletter.
Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesperson for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. A direct link to the Cornwall Alliance can be found under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand. He's author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, and thank you very much for having me on, Todd. And by the way, say hi to Scott Plusendorf for me. He was one of the signers of our Call to Truth.
I will be happy to do that. Thank you very much. Scott will be our guest tomorrow on the program. We're going to talk about Stem Cell Research 101. If you've heard the term embryonic stem cell research or adult stem cell research and you can't tell the difference between the two, this will be the conversation for you tomorrow with Scott Klusendorf. It's all about what God made, what God freely has given to us, this place to live for now, and that he has redeemed it all with the blood of his own Son, Jesus Christ, including us. That's what it's about. That's why we care about the place he made for us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.